Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
Proverbs 17 says, "A merry heart does good like medicine." So let's begin with a little bit of levity. Maybe it will wake you up since you've just eaten. A minister was planning a wedding at the close of Sunday morning service. After the benediction, he had planned to call people down for a brief ceremony in front of the congregation. For the life of him, though, he couldn't remember the names of the people he was going to be marrying. And so he said, "Will those wanting to get married please come up front?" Immediately, 9 single ladies, 3 widows, 4 widowers, 6 single men stepped to the front. I like this observation. Marriage is like a deck of cards. In the beginning, all you need is 2 hearts and a diamond. A little later, you need a club and a spade. Oh, this one lady said, "Lord, I'm not asking you to send me another husband, but I would like at least to have his tracking number." And with that, we'll talk about marrying, especially after loss. For the first few years when I was doing the Widowhood Workshop Ministry part-time, and working with the Murray City, Tennessee Church in beloved Crockett County, Tennessee, I refused to do a session like this. I did not want to even talk about marriage. I was in no condition to talk about marriage. So I avoided the subject like a plague. And then after a while, with the questions that began to come up, I thought, I've got to add a session about marriage, especially the issue of marriage after loss. So finally, I added this session. Before I added this session, I sent some emails out to some people I knew asking about some feedback from them about what they thought about folks marrying again, especially marrying after they had lost their beloved spouse. Here's one response I got. Her husband passed away a month before my wife passed away in 2013. They'd gotten married when she was 19 and he was 23. And they were married for 23 years. They had 2 daughters, a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old. And one Sunday morning, Diane was making breakfast on Sunday morning and asked her 13-year-old daughter to go down to the basement to get her father, and found her father dead on the floor. This is 2.5 years later. I'm asking Diane about this question of remarriage. Let me read to you a section of her email. "First of all, it scares me to think about the whole dating thing and just starting over. I'm not sure if I can love someone again like I loved Gary. I am very lonely and I miss his companionship every day. We talked about it before, about if something were to happen to one of us, that we would want the other to remarry. It was easy to say when he was here, and now that he is gone, that's more difficult to talk about. I would like to be able to love again, but I'm not sure that my heart is ready and that I could be able to do it again. It scares me because I know that if I get remarried, that if my spouse goes before me again, I don't want to have to go through the pain of losing a spouse again. I don't know if I could do it again or not." Brother Travis Irwin, who now lives in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, sent me this. "My dad died in January of 2013. There was a man at Mom's church whose wife died the day before my dad died. He took care of his wife for 12 years. I performed the wedding ceremony for Bob and my mom last April. Mom is 88 and he was 78. How cool is that? In the Magnolia Messenger, one of the most widely distributed periodicals in the Brotherhood, in the spring of 2021, there was an issue that included an article entitled Holding Another's Hand After the Passing of Your Mate. And it's the touching story of three couples who found another mate and who held somebody else's hand after they had lost their first mate. Bill and Verl are from the Woodson Chapel Church in Nashville, Tennessee. They are a hoot. I did a widowhood workshop at the Woodson Chapel Church, and for lunch that day, I was privileged, among other people, to eat lunch with them. And after Bill and Verl told me their story, I said, Verl, you've got to send me that story. I can't remember all this stuff. So a while later, I received a handwritten 8.5 by 11 sheet summarizing their story. Bill Pierce and Verl Sloan, she writes in the third person, had a long and happy marriage. Bill's wife had ovarian cancer and suffered for over a year. Verl's husband had Parkinson's disease for 10 years. Both were faithful caregivers and kept their spouses at home until their death. They experienced grieving and neither had thoughts of remarrying. After 14 years of being alone, Bill's son suggested to him, Dad, why don't you ask Verl out on a date? After a while, Bill decided to call Verl and ask her to go out to dinner. Being alone for 10 years, Verl was surprised. She said yes. Bill's response was, now what do I do? I've been out of this for a long time. They started dating and enjoying one another's company. After dating a while and falling in love, they married. And I love the end of what she sent me. The last two sentences say, their lives are so much happier. God's work can be done together. What a sweet couple. What a neat couple to be with. Beautiful story. Hallmark-like. Well, you probably know where I'm going now. It's the flip side. But before we do the flip side, one more. The second widowhood workshop I ever did, and it was a pretty pitiful one at that point in its infancy, I was in Medina, Ohio, and I, at the end of that workshop, had this lady come up to me with this big smile, big as a Cheshire Cat smile, and she started telling me her story. And I said, whoa, 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 sister, send me an email. And so she sent me this email. She lost her husband in 2012. They'd been married for 38 and a half years. He had lost his wife in 2013, and they had been married 40 years. They actually, I believe it was in Middle Tennessee, in their younger days, decades ago, worshiped at the same church. She recognized him, but he didn't recognize her. Now they're older and they're up in North Central Ohio. Well, they decide to go out on a coffee date at McDonald's. And I want to read to you a part of her email. We met on Wednesday after Bible study at McDonald's. I hope they ask for the senior discount. That's the only place I buy coffee when I'm on the road. It's usually less than a dollar. We went Wednesday after Bible study to the local McDonald's. I was so nervous, I was shaking. Now here's this lady who's been married for nearly 40 years. Why in the world would she be shaking in the presence of another male at McDonald's? No, she didn't, by the way, spill her coffee. She said, it was really nice. Later, about a couple of weeks later, he asked her out on another date. And she said, it was a date. He picked me up. By the way, I was talking to a lady in Middle Tennessee on the phone one day, and I stopped her in the course of the conversation, and I said, whoa, sister, I said, what's a date? She said, a date is when he picks me up and he pays the bill. That same lady, we'd met twice at a restaurant in Franklin, Tennessee, and when I picked up the bill and we walked together to the cash register, I turned to her and said, sister, this is not a date. I'm paying the bill, but I did not pick you up. It's funny how different people look at that. You know, sometimes you're on a date and don't even know it, because in somebody else's head you are on a date. Well, they got to talking and enjoying one another's company. He needed to leave Ohio and go to Arkansas to visit with an adult child of his. And while he was gone, she was diagnosed with cancer. She knew what was going to happen. He wasn't going to have anything to do with her. And she writes in this email about her losing her head, hair on her head, and about her puking her guts out, and how that he was there every difficult phase, every difficult experience. And they ended up getting married. And I love the end of her email. I never thought I could love someone else, neither did he. Storybook stuff. But it doesn't always happen that way. Effie married John. Both of them had previous marriages. But Effie ended up getting a form of dementia. John ended up having to begin to care for her. He shared with a friend of his. This is not what I envisioned in this marriage. I'm married to have a wife take care of me, not for me to take care of a wife. Before her dementia, she shared with a friend of hers how controlling that he was. Effie said he even controlled the TV shows that she watched. She'd married a control freak and didn't know it. In southern Indiana, there was a lady who posted this on her public Facebook page. Dear Facebook friends, I don't normally write very personal posts, but because most of my Facebook friends are like family, I want to tell you about the recent events in my life. I know some of you have been concerned about me, and I appreciate that more than you know. It's hard to talk to everyone all of the time, so maybe this post will answer some questions and elicit some prayers. Know this, that this is difficult for me to write, but I feel like I can make everything clear. I'm just ashamed that I have made such an impulsive decision. As most of you know, my husband Jim passed away in June of 2014. It forever changed my life. I was vulnerable, devastated, and naive. I met someone months later, and we married in July of 2015. June of 2014, July of 2015. While that may seem very quick, it didn't seem so quick to me. I don't want to go into all the details on Facebook, but after several rounds of heartache with this person, we're now divorcing. Being a teacher in a small town for 25 years lends itself to knowing many, many people. I'm taking back Jim's last name, as he was the love of my life, and I plan to continue to grieve for Jim as I move forward in my life from this very embarrassing situation. You all know that all I've ever wanted was a loving marriage like many of you have. Marriage, especially after loss, is frankly a risk. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Before we get into this, I want to commend the young people who are here, whether they be teenagers or young adults. I hope this helps you as much as it helps the rest of us. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 39 says there's definitely a right to remarry after loss. If her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes. And then there's that phrase, only in the Lord. That phrase is a phrase that has caused quite a bit of ink to be spilled. There have been things that have been written about this and a lot of discussion about this last phrase, only in the Lord. There's obviously an indication that there is a divine right granted that person who has lost their spouse to marry again, to whomever they wish. But then there's that last, let's call it a tricky phrase, only in the Lord. What does that mean? Some believe it's kind of like an adjective kind of a phrase that modifies the person that you might choose to marry. In other words, that person be a Christian. Another possibility is it might refer to the marriage itself. You know, there are some people who really shouldn't be married. Does anybody remember what happened to John the Baptist? You know, his head getting chopped off? What was it that led to his head getting chopped off? What did he say you do not have a right to have her? Remember the woman at the well? Five husbands. The one you have is not your husband. You know, in our fallen world, and we being human beings, we can really complicate life circumstances. I'm not going to get into all the weeds that can be talked about in regard to this issue. I'm just suggesting that there needs to be some care and concern about the marriage, not just the person that you're marrying, but the legitimacy of the marriage in the eyes and the sight of God. Now, here's what I know for a fact about that phrase. I would not defend either one of those perspectives with my soul at stake. But what I will defend is the fact that this phrase is like a caution flag because it's restrictive in nature. That word only, only in the Lord. It's a restrictive phrase. Whatever it means, whether it refers to the person or whether it refers to the marriage, it is a restrictive phrase. Let me suggest to you that at the very least, all of us ought to be able to agree that the flag here is saying, be careful. Be careful. This is not something that should be taken lightly. The first marriage should not be taken lightly. No marriage should be taken lightly. There ought to be concern about who we're marrying and about the legitimacy of the marriage. Both of those things ought to be of concern if we're trying to be faithful to the Lord. The most critical thing in remarriage, whether it's after a legitimate divorce or if it's after the loss of a mate, is to mourn the loss of that former relationship. It can be difficult to do that. It takes a lot of patience to do that, to be willing to participate in all the effort and the time that it takes to mourn that lost relationship. Sometimes people marry too quickly. The U.S. Census Bureau says that when a widowed person marries within 2 years, now this is statistics relative to the United States of America, when we in our country marry within 2 years of our loss, statistically, those second marriages, over 50% of them end in divorce. Over 50%. That shocked me when I found that stat, because I thought that with marital experience, the history of the marital experience, I would think there'd be a much, much lower rate of divorce and a second marriage because of all the wisdom gained from the first marital relationship. Sometimes what happens, just like that one lady I was reading to you, her Facebook post, sometimes people marry too soon. They're vulnerable. They're naive. They haven't put the time and effort into their personal recovery. H. Norman Wright has written a book, So You're Getting Married. And in that book, here's one of the things he mentions. Some cannot bear the thought of remaining alone for the rest of their days, yet they do not realize that a person can be married and still feel terribly lonely. You have to be okay on your own before you have a healthy relationship with somebody else. That takes time and effort to be okay on your own. When you look at this topic of remarriage, it's even encouraged in regard to the young widowed in 1 Timothy 5:14. And I would understand in the context there, the younger widowed, to refer to the younger widowed who are of childbearing age, because it says, the married bear children, manage the home, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. Remarriage is even encouraged in regard to the young widowed. By the way, I know a number of young widowed people. Some of the most inspiring people that I've met since my family has started this ministry are those young ladies, in their 20s and in their 30s. Buffy called her husband every day at noon. He's a teacher in a faith-based school in Southwest Georgia. One day she hung up the phone talking to him, immediately went to her car and started the commute home, but she lived 45 minutes from the school. On the way home, she called her father in law enforcement and said, Dad, would you go to the house? I'm concerned about him. Her law enforcement father found him dead at the house. He had taken his life. They had a child a little over a year old. Buffy is now remarried. Love her dearly, inspired by her life. She did some serious grieving. Struggled tremendously, but was blessed with an opportunity to marry again. Brittany's husband, Bradford, was driving in Trenton, Tennessee, and was in a horrible auto accident. They were married for a little over 1,300 days. She writes about it in a blog. She grieved deeply. Obviously shocked tremendously by what she'd experienced. Woke up one day, married, went to bed that night, widowed, in her 20s. I'm happy to report that she's married again. Happily married. An educator in West Tennessee. I can tell you about Emily. Emily, 34 years old, was awakened in her bed by her 36-year-old husband having a heart attack. She gave him CPR called 911. He was taken to the hospital. He died a few days later. She's 34 years old at that point in time. Now she's widowed. Her precious daughter, Evie, a fourth grader, I think, this school year. I hope she'll be blessed with the opportunity at some point in time to be married again. She's a jewel of a Christian lady. Her Facebook posts are nothing but inspiring. I don't know how she's done it, but by the grace of God. Marriage is a beautiful blessing. There's certainly reason why we would long for it. In Philippians chapter 4, in order to get the context, I begin reading at verse 11. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned, in whatever state I am, to be content. I know how to be abased, I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Verse 13 is often taken out of context. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. The context of that passage is about contentment. And Paul, talking about contentment, is communicating the fact that because of the strength of Jesus Christ in his life, he could be content no matter what his circumstances were. He could handle anything and everything and find contentment through Christ, because Christ strengthened him. The discussion is about contentment. If you look at that passage of Scripture, and that word state especially, whatever state I'm in, let's insert a word or two before the word state and test it. Test ourselves. I have learned in whatever physical state I am to be content. Is that possible? Is it possible for a cancer patient to be content? Is it possible for a Parkinson's patient to be content? It sure is, if that person permits Christ to strengthen them, they can find contentment. Let's put the word marital in front of state. I have learned in whatever marital state I am to be content. Now it's getting touchy. Can a single person be content? Can a divorced person be content? Can a widowed person be content? I went to school with a lady who, either in her freshman or sophomore year at Freed Hardeman, was engaged. But after the engagement, I don't remember how long the engagement was, but after the engagement, he broke it off. She's never married since. I think she's 68 years old now. I had a discussion with her a couple of years ago at the Freed Hardeman University Lectureship about the never married. And this conversation with her sparked my interest in what can we do to help the people who are never married? What about them? Have they kind of fallen through the cracks? I'm just curious, in this group right here, does anybody here know of anybody who now is in their adult life who's never been married? Raise your hand if you, hands are popping up all over the place. What is wrong with those people? Not a thing. Not a thing. For some people, it just may never happen. For some of those people, it may happen a lot later than other people. But there are never married people. Can never married people be content? I've got another question. Can married people be content? Let's get real here. There's one thing, and only one thing, upon which our contentment should hinge. Our contentment as Christians hangs on one thing: Jesus Christ and our relationship with Him. That's the one thing. Can a Ukrainian, whose country is now under siege, be content with everything that's going on? That's a high bar, isn't it? You see, no matter what our life circumstances are, the one thing that is most precious, most valuable, most critical to our life and the fullness and richness of our life, this side of eternity, is our relationship with Jesus Christ. Yes, we can find contentment. As a matter of fact, I am sometimes asked this question: Dean, from what you've read and the people that you've met, when do you think is the best time for a widowed person to remarry? And I know what they're wanting at that point. They're wanting a number. A number of months, a number of years. And I can't answer that way. Here's one way I can answer. In my personal opinion, the best time for a widowed person to remarry is when they have been able to find contentment through Jesus Christ in their widowhood. So they are not driven by a felt need, but instead driven by a choice to embrace another unique life journey with a new person. It takes a while to get to that point. It's like going to the gym and wanting to become more fit, get your cholesterol number down, or to get your weight down, or your muscles larger. It takes time and it takes effort. The same thing is true with finding contentment in unpleasant circumstances. It can be done if that contentment is built solely on our relationship with the Lord. What should be considered before marriage, if you've never been married, but someday you think you'd like to? Please listen real carefully, because this is a section that's applicable to all marriages. What should be considered? There are a lot of myths. There are a lot of untruths in regard to marriage. Let's clarify just a few. There's a book called Fit to Be Tied, written by Bill and Lynn Hybels. It's a book I used in premarital counseling for many years. And in that book, they have a chapter where they talk about four myths that they mention. There's probably more than four. Marriage will end my aloneness. Well, it might, but it might not. Marriage will heal my brokenness. Highly unlikely. Marriage will ensure my happiness. Are you kidding me? Have you talked to any married people at all in your life? Marriage is God's plan for everyone. No, it's not. For most, yeah, but not everybody. You can't build a solid, fulfilling lifetime relationship on a myth. Can you imagine two people up here in front of family and friends, and they're both fixing to say, "I do," at the right time, hopefully. I've never seen a couple that didn't, if it went this far. But anyway, you've got a couple up here, and this couple, she brings to the altar, to the marriage altar, she brings a personal issue. Let's say she has an eating disorder. When she says, I do, does she no longer have the eating disorder? Or let's say he was a messy guy, and let's make this even worse. Let's say she was a clean freak, and he's a messy guy. When they say, I do, is the messy guy going to turn into a cleaning freak, and the cleaning freak love her husband more because he's a changed man, because he said, I do? Do you see what I'm beginning to point out? I do doesn't change who they are and the issues that they have. When we get married, we bring our issues with us. And we end up sharing our issues with that other person. And hopefully we have chosen to have the most important person in our marriage relationship with us to help us with that, and that's the Lord. And it is so important for there to be transparency about those personal issues. The most important thing for any marriage is spiritual compatibility. I'm somewhat hesitant to use this phrase, but it's the trump card. It's the trump card when it comes to marriage. When two people get married, there can be socioeconomic differences, there can be age differences, there can be a lot of differences, you know, historical differences in their life. This is the trump card. This is the most valuable piece, the most valuable part of a relationship, for a lifetime relationship of fullness and richness, spiritual compatibility. I'm not saying they go to the same church. That's not enough. I'm not suggesting both of them have a baptismal certificate. That's not enough. Spiritual compatibility is about more than that. Let me tell you about the woman I'm going to marry. Maybe you can help me find her. She loves the Lord more than me. That's the person I want to be. I want to be the person who loves the Lord more than anybody else or anything else. And what a joy it would be to be in a lifetime committed marriage with a person who shared that same spirit. That is spiritual compatibility. The most important thing. I know that there are times when people marry and they're spiritually incompatible. But they become spiritually compatible, and all I can say in response to that is, praise the Lord. And I am so happy and proud that that has occurred. But for every person who tells me that story, I can real quickly get you in contact with 10 where that never happened. That spiritual compatibility is best attained prior to any I do spoken by either one. By the way, when you find that woman, my number is BR549. Does anybody remember whose number that is? Whose number is that? Junior Sample. Hee-haw, the used car salesman. Spiritual compatibility is the most important thing in a marriage relationship. You know, I think that there are a lot of spiritual widows in the church. You see that more than spiritual widowers. And I have always had a soft spot in my heart for women who are Christians whose husbands are not. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for them because I know that has to be a difficult situation. How difficult not to be able to share what is most precious and important in your life with that person that you're in a covenant relationship with. Spiritual compatibility, the most important thing. Time is the acid test of a relationship. Let me tell you about what that 15-year-old girl after I met her. We got married when we were 19 and went back to Freed Hardeman for my sophomore year at school. Do you know what she hid from me? She never, ever let me see her in hair rollers. Until I said I do. That's not fair. After we got married, I slept with her with those hair rollers in her hair. You young people will have to Google that one too. Hair rollers. Image of a hair roller. Here's the point I'm trying to make. Initially, when we interact with the opposite gender, we put our best foot forward. That's just natural and normal. That's what we do. Over time, though, with various experiences, what we find out who the real person is. It's important for us to see that person when they're stressed. How do they react when they're stressed? How do they handle conflict? You know, how do they handle difficult situations? How do they handle money? You can kind of protect your image a little bit over a period of time, but over a period of time, things begin to slip, you begin to relax and become more that person, and time is the acid test of a relationship where eventually you see the same person that they really are eventually. How long does that take? I have no earthly idea. But just keep that in mind. We need to give ourselves time, whether we're marrying the first time or we're marrying sometime after that. Family blending is involved in a marriage as well. You're not just marrying the person, you're actually embracing their family. I would never marry somebody who would cause me to become relationally distant from my children or grandchildren. So this woman you're going to help me find has got to pass 11 tests. No, 13. I have 3 daughters, 2 sons-in-law. I'm fixing to have another son-in-law. That's going to make that number 14, come to think of it. So on June 24th, I'm going to have 3 daughters, Lord willing, 3 sons-in-law, 5 grandchildren, and 2 Australian Labradoodles in Gainesville, Florida. And they're all going to have to consent. So she's going to have to pass 14 tests. See, my field's really getting narrow now, isn't it? But since you're helping me, maybe you can help to widen it. There are times when people will marry and it really stirs the pot when it comes to the family relationship. Maybe that's something that needs more time and the development of more transparency and more discussion. Because it's an important issue. And what about the expectations? Those expectations are often impacted by our past experiences. Martha called me in November, and I remember exactly where I was when she called me. She lived in Ocala, Florida at that time. And she was on the 11th month of her life after loss. And in the course of the conversation, she said, "I hate being a man." Sometimes I have a hard time understanding women. So often I will say to them, "What do you mean by that?" So I said, "Martha, what do you mean by that?" "I hate being a man." She said, "I hate doing the things that he did. That was his job." I went a step further and I said, "Like what?" She said, "I hate taking the trash out to the curb every week." She married a guy named Lewis. I hope he knew that he needed to be the one to take the trash out to the curb every week. That was her expectation. You know, there are things that we have from a previous marriage that we are going to bring into that second marriage. And some of those expectations are things that ought to be discussed. It's so important that there be transparency, that there be openness, that there be frankness, that there be this freedom to talk about anything and everything with total honesty. And then there is health issues, including the issue of sex, which obviously is going to be impacted by the individual's age. By the way, the lady that you're going to help me find is going to go on a very romantic date with me. We are going to buy a box of chocolates, and we're going to go get some flowers, and hand in hand, we're going to go to her doctor and give the flowers and candy to her doctor, and her doctor is going to tell us about her health. And then we're going to Walmart to buy a Zebco rod and reel. You get tackle now. Guys, did you know this? I saw this the other day. You get tackle when you buy a Zebco rod and reel at Walmart. And we're going to buy that and wrap it up, and we're going to go to my doctor. It's very romantic. We're going to go to my doctor. We're going to give him that Zebco rod and reel, and then he's going to tell us about my health. The point that I'm trying to make is there's got to be a discussion about things of a health nature. Do you think that there's ever been somebody that's gotten into a second marriage, especially into a second marriage, not knowing about the health of the person they're marrying? Yes, it happens. I know of somebody personally who cared for her husband with Alzheimer's faithfully at home, married another man who had dementia. When the second man died, she lost everything and ended up having to move into the basement of her daughter's home. There needs to be an openness about things of a health nature and things of an intimate nature as well. Another thing that's characteristic of this woman you're going to help me find is she's a millionaire. She's a millionaire with three sons. Now, let's assume that I marry this drop-dead gorgeous woman who loves God more. Did I mention that? Let me mention that again. This drop-dead gorgeous woman who loves the Lord more than me, and who is reasonably healthy, who also happens to be a millionaire, who has three sons, and we get married. And she dies first. Are her three sons going to have to give a sixth to my three daughters when she passes? Or what if I die first? I've been a preacher all of my life. When I die, I've got $1.50 left, and I've got three daughters with 50-cent pieces. Do they have to go get two quarters and give one of those quarters to her sons? There are financial things to work out, all kinds of things to consider. From the very first time that we came up with the crazy notion of prenuptial agreements, I have been deaf on prenuptial agreements, and for good reason, I think. They program a marriage for failure. Simply my personal opinion. However, having said that, having studied this issue and having known of some circumstances, I can see in some cases when there are adult children involved in the situation and they're really uptight about what they think is their inheritance, there might be a concession here, the possibility of maybe a prenuptial agreement to calm those adult children down. Maybe, possibly. I still don't like the idea, but I can see that as a concern. And what are you going to do about where you live? Are you going to live in her house or his house? Are you going to sell both and build something, or sell both and buy something? How are you going to work out all of that? When is the time to talk about it? Well, long before you say, "I do," that's for sure. Long before. The bottom line is there are risk factors, not just in marriage, but in all human relationships. You know, whenever we have a friendship with somebody, though we often don't realize it, we are taking a risk. Friends can betray us. Friends can sin against us. Human relationships are a risk because the only people involved in human relationships are humans. I can fail people, people can fail me. I can sin against people can sin against me. All human relationships are a risk. We risk because of the reward. We see the reward as potentially of great value, and we traditionally risk. There's no way in the world that risks can be eliminated. In human relationships, you cannot risk, reduce, or eliminate. You cannot eliminate risks. What you can do is reduce them. In the church, we hurt one another. In the church, we neglect one another. It's a risk being a Christian. There are going to be things that are going to be hard and difficult and stressful, problematic. But the risk is worth the reward. It's the family of God. God is recognized as the Father. We want to honor His will. It is going to be problematic. There are risks, but we can reduce the risk by cultivating a deep, personal, close fellowship in that family of God. There are risk factors to consider in marriage. The goal ought to be to try as best we can to reduce them. I hope some of the things that I've mentioned have been helpful. Remarriage at midlife or later is somewhat like the merger of two major corporations. Be wise in what you are doing. That is my suggestion. You know, Sprint and T-Mobile, a lot of research went into that merger. Sometimes when two companies look at a merger and they do all the study about the merger, they'll do a study for months and months and sometimes years, and then they'll back off and they'll call it off. The same kind of care and concern, I think, is something that we need to do in a human relationship of much greater value than any corporation. We do need to be careful about what we're doing. We need to make sure that we're led by our thinker and not by our feeler, and that the most important thing be that the work of God be manifested in our lives, whether single or married, that God be glorified, that He be praised in our life. I cannot thank the Graymere Church enough for the chance to come. I really have enjoyed this. I know I speak for Cheryl Wayne Lahan, who today is 72 years old. Did I mention that earlier today? Today is his birthday. If you've not yet wished him happy birthday, please do that. But on behalf of Cheryl Wayne Lahan, on behalf of my entire family, who have as their family passion project, the Widowhood Workshop Ministry, we want to thank you for letting us come to Columbia, Tennessee. And I hope that it's been of some help to you, and maybe even you can be of better help to somebody else now. Again, let me mention about the public Facebook page, Widowhood Workshop Ministry. If you would like and follow that, that would really help us. Visit the website, widowhoodworkshop.com, and let me tell you about an event very special the last weekend of July, the only one that I know of, a widow-widower retreat. This will be the fifth year. My family came up with this idea, and we thought, well, if there are youth meetings and youth rallies and, you know, the Challenge Youth Conference, and we have marriage seminars, and we have leadership training weekends, why in the Brotherhood don't we have a widow-widower retreat? And so that's what we do at the end of July. Every year, we invite people to come. Last year, we had nearly 100 people there from 16 different states. It is a wholly encouraging event. It builds their social network, and it lifts their morale spiritually. If you know of somebody who qualifies, who has lost their spouse, we want you to let them know about that event. You can find it if you look at the public Facebook page. You'll find it on the widowhoodworkshop.com website as well. We'll be talking about that a lot on both of those social media. And let me close by thanking one really special person. Mike Gilchrist, I love you dearly, brother. I first learned about Mike through his son, Jack. Jack and his wife, Katie, they served the Lord up in Scott Depot, West Virginia. I was up there for a widowhood workshop, and they started a local widowhood program there. in Scott Depot, West Virginia. And it was through them that Mike came to the retreat that we have in Laverne every year. And that's where I met him for the first time. And now I'm here because of his leadership and his influence. Mike knows something about how difficult this is. And others of you who are sitting in this room know about how difficult this is, the life after loss. But he is really trying to bring glory to God by how he's reacting to this loss and living and embracing this loss in his life. And Mike, I just want to thank you again for all that you've done to help this opportunity come to fruition. You're a great brother, great source of encouragement, and I look forward to working with him to help build a local widowhood ministry here, if the Lord permits. Thank you very much for your time. Can we just dismiss Andrew?
Dean and Cheryl, we best to speak on behalf of the elders and all of the Graymere families here, and for all of those that